On the cover, Puck and Frequency sit under blankets and pillows, a fort built in Ben's room. A single flashlight illuminates Puck as he gestures wildly, telling stories of adventure, heroics, and a kiss.
Are you seeking thrilling tales of adventure and superheroics? Do you crave the weekly drama of teenage hijinks and high school angst? Then don't miss the next issue of These Protean City Comics. This issue featuring...
I'm Penance, and sometimes I can be a real witch.
It's Puck, the doomed trickster. You're not going to remember me.
Frequency, bringing the megahertz.
Now, with our heroes assembled, let's turn the page on this issue of Protean City Comics.
This is Volume 21, Recovery, Issue 2, Homecoming.
We start with a panel that is the outside of Peacoy. And this is... So this volume is coming out in December, so of course it's all decorated with like bright lights and there's some snow coming down. And the next panel just shows like pulled in through like a frosted window, the room of Ben. So Ben, you've been running a mutant liberation group for a while.
Yes, I was.
You were. Things have been busy. Things are less busy now.
Yes.
What do we see you doing when we come in on this panel?
So one thing that's the first thing that you probably notice is very strikingly different is Ben's room is a lot cleaner than it normally was. Normally there was stuff all over the place.
Yeah.
And sort of being on his own and being in charge, there was this, you know, it's not part of his nature. He was just being lazy.
Yeah.
So now... He like got in the habit of picking up after himself and putting things away and cleaning things.
Nice.
So there's, you know, probably the first thing that we actually see is him like sitting, eating like a bag of chips, and like it's empty, and he just throws the bag away and it lands on the floor next to the garbage can, and there's just a look on Ben's face of like, I should get up and pick that up. When normally, who cares? Just let it sit there.
And I think, so are you like sitting on the bed, sitting on a chair?
Yep. He has a tablet with some kind of ebook open, probably just working on schoolwork.
Could you give us just a little physical description of Ben?
Absolutely. He's inside. Peacoy is very warm. It's not like it's drafty or anything like that. But he's still got a sweat shirt on with a hood. The hood's probably pulled up, but not super far so that you can't see his face. So you can still see his features. You can see his like his curly red hair is like peeking out the front. He has a pair of headphones on, but they're just strapped around his neck. So he's not actively listening in his ears, but there's music coming out of them. If you look down a little bit further, you can trace the wire down, and the wire isn't plugged into anything, but there's still sound coming out of it. And then, you know, he's sitting there with jeans, probably sneakers off, just wearing socks.
Cool.
Hanging on the bed.
All right. And then I think the next panel shows just a different angle of you sitting on the bed that we can see the window from. And there's just like a pair of antlers and a hooded head popping up at the bottom of it.
Yeah. I think I was just thinking I probably do try to come in through the window.
Yeah, I know you.
Yeah, you know me.
don't you tell me how Puck do.
And so, yeah, he would like pull, like you would see the antlers, like, and then some hands, and he slowly pulls himself up. And once he gets up onto like the windowsill and gets the window open, he's going to take the mask off and just be John and kind of like crawl in through this window and probably fall, and it's not super graceful. And then just like recover and end up like lying on the ground.
Do you bring snow in?
No.
Okay.
No.
Good guest.
Well, okay.
No, I think he's a good guest. He would not, he would kick his boots off and not track dirt in or whatever.
John, that is so 90s. You know we have a front door.
But people watch the front door.
And someone climbing up a house through a window will be less noticeable if someone were to see
I was quick. It was quick.
I'm sure you were. I'm just saying it's weird. But anyway, come on in. Shut that window behind you.
John would stand up and close the window. And then find something just set to weird to sit on. Like an old TV that's just like in the corner. On the ground. Like a big old CRT TV.
Yeah.
It's just like hanging out as spare parts.
Definitely.
And he's kind of just like sit down and like and just like sort of play the drums on his like on his knees. Like he's just like excited. Like there's like he's just got a lot of energy going on. And he's like, Ben, how you doing? How you doing? You doing good?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Trying to get back into the swing of things. You sure you don't want an actual seat? I've got
no,
a chair.
No, that's fine.
Okay. I mean, I'm not going to, I know you, I'm not going to fight you on it, but how are you doing?
I'm good.
I can tell.
I got some things to tell you. Some good things, some bad things, maybe bad things, probably. He kind of looks off into the out the window and just kind of goes, hopefully not bad things. Turning out better than I thought things.
Okay, just spit it out. What is going on?
Well, he kind of like stops and takes a breath. I went to go see Alina and the asset and Ramon. And Ramon kind of just like bailed. He went off and he does his thing. And the asset was shot. I should have mentioned that. That was not on my list of bad things.
So it's a good thing?
No. I mean, he's fine now. It's just like it didn't become a bad thing. He was the Steam Society is out there doing stuff again. I think he handled it. He kind of didn't say, but he.
Okay, so are we like suiting up? Are we going out?
Editor's note: he handled it. See the asset number 235.
No. I think everything's fine. After he came back, he went off. He did some asset. He stormed off and did something. I was just talking to Alina about the stuff that's been happening and how the city is recovering, I think. And then we're all like kind of like getting back on our feet and stuff.
Trying to get back to normal.
But we had a moment alone.
What do you mean?
And he kind of like he probably stands up and like walks over and like kind of just like shoves Ben and is just like, you know, like alone.
So I mean, okay, and
I kissed her.
Oh shit. Oh, you mean like a moment?
And she didn't like throw me or punch me or hurt me.
Wait, we're talking about Alina?
Alina.
Alina. You.
Yeah.
And Alina.
Yeah.
Kissed.
Yeah.
Alone.
Yeah. Mostly alone. Well, mine shot was down the hallway, but she didn't see. I don't think she saw. She didn't see.
You know, you've got to learn to open with things like this.
The asset, well, no, I guess I forgot the asset getting shot too. So, look, things are getting better. Like the city is recovering. Like we're healing. You're not off at some warehouse. Like you're back here. Alina and I kissed. I'm probably not going to die. Holly isn't dead.
Well, everything
is better.
I would hope that kissing someone wouldn't kill you. I mean, okay, let's get back to the important matter at hand. You kissed Alina. Now, is that like, I'm confused. Like a peck on the cheek? Like
no, hey, like full on. We were in like the asset left. He stormed off. Everyone was very like we had just been in a fight. We were yelling at each other. Everyone was very emotional. And I saw a moment and I took it and she didn't reject me.
High five.
And we'll high five.
Okay, that sounds like you're sharing a moment of triumphant celebration.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a team move we never use.
When I share a triumphant celebration with someone, give them influence over me, and spend one team from the pool to clear one box of my doom track.
Do you want to do that?
I'm going to do that.
Cool.
When I share a triumphant celebration with someone, ask them if they think you're cool. If they say yes, give them influence and take influence over them. If they say no, mark a condition or spurn them immediately. If they're a teammate, then either way, add a team to the pool.
Okay.
And John is going to kind of just like, he's going to stand up. We were probably sitting. And he's going to start pacing. Like he's very serious right now. And he's just going to be like, well, and he's like counting off on his fingers. And he's like, well, like we saved the city. We stopped Falcon. You were running a mutant army. Holly's not dead. You went on a podcast. Like everyone knows who you are. We're both so cool.
Okay. Yeah. Hold up. Reverse a few minutes here.
John freezes.
There's six small panels of Puck sitting in exactly the same position.
He's got a very nervous look on his face, like maybe you finally heard him.
What are you talking about? Holly's not dead.
So John's gonna kind of turn and sit back down on the TV and face you. So I did a thing during the battle. When Holly exploded, she
died.
But there was a clone of her. I don't know if you've noticed. There are a couple of them around the city.
Yeah. I ran into several of them.
And I'm, you know how I do things with memories and stuff?
I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. This time. I moved all of her memories from the dying body into the other one that wasn't dying. And wasn't sure it was going to work. I actually thought it wasn't going to work for a while. And there was a moment where I was really worried that it had gone really bad. And that maybe like neither of us were going to make it out of it. It was a little hairy. I took her to safety before, like when you guys ran off with Kalino to the hospital. And I hid her because I wasn't sure how I felt about what I did. But she's fine. And she mostly remembers being Holly. And she can, like, she's been going through physical therapy and like learning to walk again and stuff like that in the new body. She freaked out a lot at first. But you know, like we're heroes. I had to try to save her.
Yeah, no, I hear that, but John, we've done a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
We've done a lot of stupid stuff. I don't know what to think of this. This sounds like one of the stupidest things you've ever done. It's great news, but did you tell anyone?
I've been working with Dr. Amari. She's a scientist at the university.
Yeah, I know her.
Told her she's been helping me do some stuff with the power with my powers. I'm a little worried that the trickster like got its eye on Holly. And so Dr. Amari has been working on building like a suppressing device that might protect her. So hopefully she won't be like hunted like I am. And I wasn't sure because I wasn't sure if she was going to make it. I wasn't sure if she was going to be okay. And so I didn't tell anyone. But she left the lighthouse today. I think she's going to make it. I think it'll be fine.
You've just been holding onto her this whole time.
Well, I mean, like, I guess I would have let her go. I wasn't like kidnapping her.
Yeah, I know, but you didn't tell any of us. I've been carrying this on me.
Yeah, I'm
sorry. I know it sounds like I'm angry at you, and I am, but I'm not. Like this is, it's good news. It's a relief, but I just don't know how to process it.
John's gonna like get up and walk over and sit down next to Ben and just be like, yeah, I wasn't sure it was gonna work. I wasn't sure she was gonna that the memories were gonna stick. Like she was dead. when I like went into her mind. And I didn't want to like get anyone's hopes up. And today was the first day that I was really like sure it was gonna keep. And then I came and told you.
Would either of you like to pierce the other's mask?
I think I probably would.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead and roll to do that?
Okay. So I have a -2 on mundane.
Oh boy.
So I rolled a 4, so I got a 2.
We get the panel that shows Ben like peering at John and like looking serious and question, like clearly questioning his motives, his thinking, everything like that. And then we see his vision move down a little bit to the door of the bedroom, which is very slightly open. And there's a little furry green 7-year-old mutant kid that's standing there with like 6 enormous wide eyes, having just heard a discussion of taking a person's mind while they were dying and putting it into another person's mind. And that's definitely not something that is a great thing for someone else to know. And then the little furry mutant pops into the hallway and starts sprinting down it.
I jump up, throw the door open, and I'm chasing after him, like, and I'm screaming, like, Terry, get back here right now.
What do you do, Buck?
I think there's a moment, because the way that I imagine this was all, like, situated,
yeah,
was that they were sitting on Ben's bed,
yeah,
sort of facing each other, and yeah, so John didn't see the kid,
yeah,
and so there was this moment where they were, like, they were talking about Holly, and then Ben just kind of, like, paused and stared at him for a moment, and then got up and sprinted out the door.
Yeah.
And there's a moment where John is just, like, pale white, like, I fucked this up. And then he hears you yelling and is just like, oh, okay, there's got to be someone there. And then he's going to get up and run after you.
So there's a panel that shows, like, Terry has climbed up onto one of the walls and is, like, running sideways, like, with hands and clawed feet and just, like, sprinting down as fast as he can as you're shouting after him. I think you are maybe rolling to provoke, though.
Okay.
To provoke Terry to come back. Terry.
It's a roll plus superior, so yeah, I have a +3, so I got an 8.
Okay. On a 7-9, they can instead choose to stumble, you take +1 forward against them. Err, you gain a critical opportunity. Or overreact, you gain influence over them. And I think that given that we are talking about a little baby child mutant, it is going to have to be an overreaction thing.
Okay.
And so Terry starts just like letting out these howls at being yelled at. And is just like scrambling and like scrambles up onto the ceiling and is just like holding on to like one of the sconced lights and going just like, arr! Arr! Ben's chasing me. Arr! And then we get a panel inside of Sage's room. Sage, what's your room look like?
My room is currently very dark, but okay, it's got, and it's kind of a mess. It's been sort of a mess for a while. My life is in shambles. My bed's not made. I've got crystals all over the floor. There's a lot of candle wax in spots all over the floor in like circles where I've been trying to make pentacles on the floor. And, you know, like I'm not cleaning up anything. So it's a disaster in there. But there's lots of Wiccan apparel and stones and flowers and things.
Cool.
Yeah. So I hear Terry screaming, mm-hmm, and Terry is a chronic overreactor.
Yes.
And I'm still trying to process everything that has happened in the past couple of weeks, trying to process what I'm going to do with the lunar lens. So for a minute, I just ignore him and his howling because I just figure he'll calm down eventually. But then he says, Ben is chasing me. And Ben is not an overreactor. So that seems out of character. So I'm going to get up. My hair is greasier than it normally should be. I probably have been wearing the same outfit for a couple of days. I'm just sort of like in my zone and not paying attention to like my myself. So I'm going to throw the door open and just kind of very authoritatively walk down the hallway and stare at Terry on the chandelier or on the lamp or whatever.
Yeah. And I think that like storming down the hallway is our first like full panel that shows Sage. Can you give us just a little physical description for Sage?
Yeah. She's wearing an oversized like black Black Sabbath t-shirt. and her black pants are dirty because she's been on the floor and there's you know, some stains on them. She's not wearing her boots as she normally is, so she really stomped down the hallway to make more noise.
Yeah.
But she's got long dark hair with like purple at the ends. Usually she has good eye makeup on, but it's not there. She looks kind of tired. But she's kind of a pale person with a lot of dark accents.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. So we get a panel that shows kind of like a side panel looking through the wall that shows Terry hanging from a light on the ceiling and like Ben standing down below it, Sage storming one way and Puck coming down the opposite side of the hallway.
Yeah, and he's maybe trying to like jump and grab the kid, but like half-heartedly.
Oh, that's so easy though. It's so easy to jump up and grab the kid.
Okay.
Do you grab the kid?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he, like his arms and legs are swinging around.
And I'm going to stomp down the hallway, kind of get my eyes on what the hell's happening, start to process who I'm seeing. Because mm-hmm. I know Ben lives here. Like, that's fine. But I didn't expect to see John.
Yeah.
Who is holding this kid. Like,
who is holding one of my
kids. Arms length. Like, he has never held a child before.
Yeah.
Yes. So I'm just going to walk up, take a second to process. So there's like a panel of her assessing the scene with her eyes, like, what the hell am I looking at? And then I'm just gonna be like, put him down.
And I'll do that.
So this is a weird question.
Uh-huh.
Are you assessing? You're technically assessing the situation.
Maybe. It is a 6.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's what I think happens. You're like, you're looking at John, mm-hmm. and he's seeming out of place for a moment. And then you see it's as though his eyes are replaced with black mist. And for a second, his eyes are, to your vision, replaced with black mist. And we see that, and it just looks like this deep infinity going outward. And you get just a vision of a different realm, and you feel like pulled for a moment towards it, and then feel this enormous, like, just around the panel we can see just like darkness around Sage, this like weighty, painful darkness that's this black haze that's the same kind of haze we see from Puck when he uses his powers. And I think I'm gonna ask you to take a powerful blow. You basically, as you looked to him, something in you, some part of your powers, saw the doom within him. It's close enough at this point.
That's plus conditions.
Yes.
Right? So that's a 6.
All right. Very nice. You weather the blow. So tell us, like, what does it look like as you weather this blow of seeing, like, an eternal being of horribleness?
So as I'm looking at everything, I make kind of direct eye contact with John, which we haven't done probably in a long time, if ever. He and I are not usually close. Mm-hmm. And we make direct eye contact, and I get this like shuddering vision of blackness and torment and fear and death. And I get this overwhelming sense of dread. And in that moment, I feel so afraid that I rush at him and tackle him, because I think he's going to hurt that kid. He's going to hurt Terry, because I feel so much panic that I feel fear more than I recognize my friend.
Okay.
Can I describe my side of that too?
Yes. Okay. Absolutely.
So they make eye contact.
Yeah.
And for the first time, maybe forever, John becomes like hyper aware that Sage is a girl. And he's like an about their age, like he never had seen her that way before, and he's just like, just terror and fear deeper than anything he has like she's like looking at him. Why is she looking at him? What's going on here? What is happening? And then she just like runs right at him. And I think he drops the kid and like kind of just curls up in a ball and tries to just like protect himself.
Yeah.
Okay. So once he's dropped the kid, like, are you hitting him? Or are you tackling him?
No, I'm going to tackle him to the ground. I'm going to hold him down by the throat and like pull back my hand. Like I'm going to punch him in the face. And then by that time, all the fear has sort of subsided and that moment has passed. And I register, this is John. He's my friend. He does good things. So there's that moment of realization of what I'm doing, who I'm doing it to. And I'm going to be like, but I'm not going to move my fist because I won't admit I'm wrong. So I'm just going to be like, why are you here?
I can tell you why he's here.
I wish someone would.
I can tell you why he's here.
Terry, shut up.
Terry. Terry, do you have something to tell me?
And he's looking directly at Ben.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and tell her. I'm going to tell her anyway.
I'm still sitting on top of John. I'm just not going to punch him. I'm just sitting on him.
And he like points and has like a big, like furry pointed hand. And he's going like, Ben, and this guy, they killed a striped eagle, and then they put her brain in another striped eagle, and then she was walking around, and she had occupational therapies, so she can hold the pencils now, just like I got. And he like holds up like his big like paw hands, and goes, but so now she's like walking around, and I think that's it.
Wow. That's interesting. You did a really good. Yeah, you did a really good job telling me that story. Could you go make some popcorn? I'm feeling kind of hungry. Would you go make me some popcorn?
And like a big grin comes to his face, and he starts like loping off down the hallway. There's like another kid coming down the hallway, and he just like hops up onto the wall and skitter, skitter, skitters.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna turn back to John,
who has, I think, turned just beat red. This is just maximum embarrassment. He didn't want to tell her this way. And they are probably very close to each other, too.
Yeah, I'm sitting on you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think that John is just going to try to, like, stand up. And if you won't let him do that, then he's going to just, like, try to lift you up, which he might be able to do.
Like, You don't have super strength.
No, I'm sure he can stand up, but my hand is staying on his throat.
Yeah. Okay. He's just trying to get you off of him, and then
it's awkward.
Does that panel look like you standing on the floor with your hand on his throat, or are you like clinging, like are you holding on to him?
Yeah, if he stands up, if he starts to rise, I'll put my feet on the floor and like stand up because I know he's stronger than me. There's no point in fighting him. But I will keep my hand on him even just as a gesture of I'm not finished.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is it like hand around the throat, fist back?
Right now, it's more I put my fist down, but okay. I'm not done like interrogating him, and I want him to know that if he it could have been a collar situation if I wasn't already choking him.
Okay.
That was my question. Do you still have him choked, or are you now just grabbing
him? Yeah, now it's more of a gesture of like, mm-hmm. this is my house and you are here and I'm going to get answers.
Yeah.
What the fuck was that?
Kids say the darndest things.
I'm going to turn to Ben and keep my hand exactly where it is. Ben, what the fuck was that?
Terry had it mostly right. I had nothing to do with it. I just found out about it a minute ago. I don't know how I'm taking this, but apparently our friend doesn't mind, you know, we don't care about a clone. I mean, we can put our friend's minds in a clone body. I mean, yeah, it's our friend. But still, who knows what that... I still don't know how to process this. John, just tell her.
Okay, hold on. In here. And I open a door to like a room that's like a rec room. And I'm going to open the door and say, in now.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Because down the hallway, every single door is open with kids sticking their heads out.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to force him in the room. And I assume Ben is coming with me. Do you want to come? Yeah.
Yes.
And I'm going to yell down the hall to the kids. Hey, movie night. The first one to finish all their homework gets to pick the movie. And they all, you know, love movie night.
We've got a little faded word bubble of, hey, no powers. And like, scris, 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 scris.
Terry's already making popcorn, so that's actually really
yeah.
good.
Yeah, really perfect. Yeah. So I'm going to shut the door, lock the door, and turn with my arms crossed to Puck.
And he is standing in the corner of this room, like as far away from Sage as he can physically be without like going through the wall. And he just kind of like kicks at something on the ground. It's just like not net anything, just kicking at the ground. And it's just like, look, she was dying. And I mean, you guys were taking care of Kalino, and I saw an opportunity and I took it and I saved her.
You saved the dying person,
mm-hmm.
but you killed the person you put her in.
Mm. And John kind of gets this like weird look on his face, and he's like, I think those memories are still there. I mean, they were always the same person.
They weren't, though. And I'm going to turn to Ben for confirmation, because it seems to me that you replaced an entire person with an entire other person. Whether they originated from the same person or not, they were two separate people.
Just as GM, I will confirm that we have seen that she has both sets. Yeah.
She's been, it's part of like the recovery. She has this notebook she's been going through. Like she has some memories from Holly that I pulled out of the other body. And she like only has those once, and then she has some memories of training that were definitely just the clone, and she has those once, and she has some other memories that are like just that she has twice. So I don't think the other one, like, they just merged. I don't know. It was dirty. I had to do it quick. I had to act. I didn't have a lot of time, but I had to do something. She was our friend. I couldn't just let her die. Had the power to do something.
John, I can appreciate what you were trying to do. I'm kind of relieved that it worked. But had it not worked, what could have happened? It seems like a reckless chance to take.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, it didn't go super well. I wasn't sure that I could even pull memories out of someone who was mostly dead. I definitely exerted myself and you know, trickster stuff.
What do you mean trickster stuff?
Like when I use my powers in a big way, he finds me a little more. And maybe now her, it got complicated, but I think she's safe and I'm safe, and like it worked out. I didn't have an option. I had to do it.
You always have an option.
I don't know if I could have lived with myself if she had died and I knew that I could save her and didn't and chose not to. And like, you guys were taking care of Kalino, there was nothing for me to do. This was the thing that I could do. That might be sharing a moment of weakness or a vulnerability or weakness.
I was going to say, I think there's two possibilities there. Mm-hmm. One would be sharing a vulnerability or weakness. And one would be, it could be that you're trying to provoke her into dropping it.
Mm.
And so, are you more interested in sharing your emotional state, or are you more interested in getting people to move past it so that you can keep being heroes and friends?
I'm more interested in getting past it. I don't know. I don't have influence over her. I don't know if I need to have influence over her to.
You don't necessarily. She needs to be susceptible to your words.
Are you susceptible to my words?
I think at the very least, I understand the strong desire to do what you feel is right, even if everybody else thinks it's wrong. Because
mm-hmm.
I've definitely done that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I can sympathize with him. I don't agree with what he did, but I definitely understand why he did it.
And because you are teammates,
mm-hmm.
and because you've had some of those same like struggles, I think It seems to me that you would be not vulnerable, that you would be susceptible to his words.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. Oh, if, yeah, that's what
if
I'm
you're
saying.
Trying to do that.
Yeah, I do want to do that.
Okay.
I want people to understand. So I'm going to roll. So that's a 5 minus 3 is 2.
Buck, you're getting upset, like visibly upset about this, right?
Yeah.
And we start getting just like the bat, like we have these kind of close panels of your face and around you is the haze starting to like spread out kind of from the sides of the panels towards you. And we see in the next panel that the entire, it's that's pulled back as kind of like you kind of hit, you hit the end of your statement that like you had to do what you had to do. And we get it zoomed out and see the rec room and the entire ground is covered in that thick black hazy mist, and it's just surrounding the three of you. And from that, you get the feeling that you are extremely exposed right now. What do you do? Also, that's freaky as hell for you two.
Oh, we see it?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
This room is filling with the black haze that comes from him using his powers.
I think that he is going to like reach into the pocket or something, like whatever he does when he pulls out the mask.
Yeah.
And he's going to pull up his hood and put on the mask.
Yeah.
And run.
Okay.
And just leave this room.
Yeah.
And go somewhere.
John, wait. Don't go.
And he's just going to keep running.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to try to, are you like trying to like really stop him, or are you trying?
I'm like half, it's half hearted, like half I'm afraid of him being here with us, and I don't want him, I don't want this in our house with the, you know, all the kids. But at the same time, I do sympathize with him.
Yeah.
I feel the pain that he feels. This is the most exposed vulnerability that I've seen from John.
I think if you're ambivalent, you're not provoking.
No, I'm not provoking. Yeah. It was more of a half-hearted, like, I don't know what the right thing is, but I feel bad.
The door's locked. Are you just slamming through that door?
I think, well, I was hoping that there could be a window something.
There's totally a window.
So he does like a weird, like, hop off two walls and then like climb up and lift the window up and slide through kind of all in a fluid motion.
Nice.
And then he's just gone.
Yeah. And so we get a shot of him just like jumping into blackness and being gone. Sage, Ben. What do you do?
I'm just going to stand there for a second. I feel like Ben and I have shared a lot of silences, and neither of us feel the need to fill them if there's not a good reason. And I got to process. So there's, I think, a couple panels of them just kind of standing near each other, processing. And then I'm just going to say, without looking at him, what do we do about Kalino?
I mean, someone needs to tell him, but I really don't think it should be us.
I think it should be John, but seems like he's got his hands quite full at the moment.
You also definitely haven't heard from Kalino for a couple days.
Yeah. And we know why.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, if you feel that you need to, but I can't
don't. I can't.
I can't do it either.
Oh, shit.
I mean, John did come to tell me, and I'm sure he was going to tell you. And you know what just bothers me is just I didn't know.
None of us knew. He didn't want us to know. That's how he does things, by himself. And if he has to tell us, he does. It's just never been this bad before. Or this big before.
But I think he needs to be the one to tell to Kalino.
I think you're right.
In between the panels of this conversation, we get... like so those are kind of like... we get that conversation in square panels on opposite sides of the page. And coming down the middle are kind of flatter, longer panels that show Puck running through the city. And it's icy and cold and dark, but the windows from different buildings and businesses are like lit up brilliantly. And each time he comes near one of those windows, there is a shadow reflection of him that looks like that same vague, smoky thing, and it looks like it's watching him. So as he runs by, it stays in one place. Buck, where are you going?
I think that he would... He needs to go somewhere. He couldn't be there. He needs to think. He's a little bit displaced because his sanctuary is still sort of being occupied by Holly. But there's one place that he knows will be empty, which is his house.
Okay.
His parents are like never there.
Yeah.
And so he is going to run home.
Okay. Run home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No, yeah, and I think it's partially that he needs to think and partially that like and so he needs to be alone, but also like he saw the mist too.
Yeah.
He's starting to be concerned that like his powers are bleeding out and he doesn't want to put anyone else at risk.
Yeah.
Because he just put Holly at risk in a big way.
Yeah.
And so he wants to be alone where no one will be.
And I think that the panels that we see, that we see with you running away, start out kind of those constricted, tight views.
Mm-hmm.
And as you go further away, they start pulling out. And we start seeing more of Protean City looking okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because that really makes like the stark contrast between Puck being deep in this very bad place and like things chugging along. Like we get a panel that shows Puck like with just this looming shadow shape in a window behind him, and like one street over, Silver Sleet is driving in his snowmobile like throwing presents to kids, and so like we have like this very split world that is showing things being okay. And like there's a couple of like of striped eagles in like big heavy jackets. They're like pulling down a falcon sign and stuff like that. And then we get further from the city and there's fewer people. And so we have you moving through like these parts of the city that are lively during the night,
mm-hmm.
right? Like these areas that have bars and have people around during the night, and go into the more kind of extraordinarily upscale residential area. Mm-hmm. So you've got huge luxury apartment buildings, just enormous skyscrapers, but skyscrapers that don't necessarily have like a warmth to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like this isn't your corner bodega. This is like, this is more closed off.
Yeah.
And Puck getting to his building and going up in the elevator and opening up into essentially completely closed apartment.
Yeah. I think they probably own the whole floor. Maybe not on the top level, but very close.
Yeah.
Like his mom works for Callaway Corporation. She's their CEO.
Yeah.
She makes a lot of money.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know. Where is he? He doesn't come here a whole lot. Like he sleeps here, I think.
Yeah.
But unless it's like a late night of doing hero work and then he would crash at the sanctuary.
Okay.
But he would probably go over to the fridge where he usually does a lot of the shopping.
Yeah.
Cause his parents just totally forget to even like bring food home.
Yeah.
And so he would just try to see like if there's any like a pickle or something he could eat just to grab quickly. And just like, he just ran from like midway through the city up all the way up to the top of the city.
Oh man. What sad food do you take out ready to eat directly from the carton or box? Is it a pickle?
Yeah, I think there's like a jar that just has like one pickle left. And he just like grabs it and he's like, oh, all right, I don't know how long this has been here.
And then the refrigerator door closes and we see John's fairy assistant standing in his home where he is not supposed to be,
mm-hmm.
and is never supposed to be,
mm-hmm.
just looking at John with fear on his face. What do you do?
I think that John stops and slowly opens the jar and pulls out the pickle.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just, as he starts to eat it slowly, he's just like, what you doing here? Not supposed to come out this far.
You felt it, didn't you?
I always feel it.
No, it's different. It's different tonight. It's different. I can feel it in me, I'm not supposed to feel it in me. And with, like, just from the light from the refrigerator, you can see, like, in his crystalline body, there is some vague, shadowy shapes, like mist.
I think that John will put down the rest of the pickle and close the fridge. Or no, he's gonna, instead of that, he's gonna put down the pickle and he is going to grab the aide and like pull him down and sort of like bring him towards the refrigerator so he can get a look in his eyes and like look in his skin under the light of the refrigerator and just kind of like look at it closely.
And it frequently will be like a little sassy, especially recently. It's been kind of rude, and now it isn't. It's going along in a very placid way. But you can see, like, there is no question. It is. It's like almost like the tendons of muscles formed out of vague, vague hazy smoke, and it kind of like comes in and out of different parts of its body.
I want to try to, this is like, the aide is in theory a manifestation, like a projection.
Yes.
Of my powers.
Yeah.
And my mind.
Yeah.
And I want to try to he's got his hands like flat on this aide, the counter hymns, whatever body.
Yeah.
And I want to try to like reform him back into the very like very crystalline centaur, less looking like John form that he was maybe a couple volumes ago.
Yeah.
And really just try to like push all of this dark energy or whatever that's inside him out.
Yeah. Go ahead and roll to unleash your powers.
Okay. 6 and 3. +1.
Okay. 10. All right. Very nice.
So 10.
That was a good thing to get a 10 on. So we get a couple of panels that show the crystalline John like losing some definition and going back to looking like sort of a generically human shape created from these mental construct crystals. And the black haze from it seems to have dissipated for now. I think maybe John closes his eyes to do this work, and when he opens them, that black is in his eyes again, and it kind of like fades out into the room. And the centaur looks to John and says, in kind of like a more stiff way, because it's lost some of something. It's moved back into being more of a construct. It says, "The sanctuary is still secure, but it is surrounded and beset by danger. Do I return?"
And John kind of thinks for a moment and says, yeah, go back there. Make sure Holly's okay. And stay there this time. It's dangerous out here.
And its head kind of clicks to the side for a second. And it goes, "For you as well." And it just dissipates into a bunch of the different fairies. And like they skitter off into the walls in all sorts of different directions.
John would close the fridge and put the jar somewhere to be taken care of later. And go over to just that, like a landline. I bet his parents have a landline.
Weird.
Yeah.
Do you know how to use one?
Yeah. I mean, it looks like it just looks like a cell phone that's connected to a wall.
That's true.
How hard could it possibly be? And he is going to call Sage, I think.
Do you know that number?
No.
Okay.
Absolutely not. Are you calling the orphanage or my cell phone?
I think your cell phone. I don't think he knows the orphanage phone number.
Okay.
But he would probably have all of his friends' cell phone numbers memorized.
Okay.
Actually, who am I kidding? He has everything memorized. Yeah, he does. Has memory manipulation powers.
Yes, he does.
So there's a call coming in from a Protean City area code.
Yep. That I don't recognize. You don't recognize.
Landlines can only call other landlines. That's how it works.
I'm pretty sure.
I'm still sort of hanging around Ben, and I don't recognize the number.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask him to caller ID check this.
And I think at this point, you're in like you were saying that you're setting up the movie night.
Yeah.
And so you're like hanging out in the back of the room, and there's all the kids like watching a movie.
Yeah,
of some
and
kind.
My phone starts to buzz like in my pocket, and I pull it out, and only a couple people ever call me, and this is not one of those numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Given all the shit that's gone down, I don't want to answer a random number. So I'm just going to hand my phone to Ben and said, hey, can you screen this for me? I don't know this number.
Because it's, you know, comic form. Probably like viewing it, the screen will probably like do like a weird like glitchy thing real quick. And then the number disappears and is replaced with Hob Household.
Nice.
It looks like it's coming from John's house.
His house? And I'll take the phone and answer it. John?
Yeah.
What?
Sage?
What number is this?
It's my parents' house.
I'm sorry. I just can't picture you with parents or a house. I'm having a little bit of a... What's going on?
So I ran away.
And I remember.
And I probably shouldn't have done that. I want to be a team. I'm going to have to face this thing. That's the thing that's hunting me soon. And I need you guys to be a team. I need us to be a team so that you can help me. And so I need to do whatever I need to do to get us there. And so I need you to tell me what we need to do, what I need to do to get us there so that we can be a team again. And and I can live.
That is definitely revealing vulnerability or weakness.
Okay. Hell yes. But it was beautiful.
I'm psyched.
So when you share a vulnerability weakness with someone, give them influence over you.
I already have it.
You already have influence over me. And ask them if they honestly think there's hope for you. If you say yes, I mark potential. Or clear one box of my doom track. And if they say no, I mark a condition or my doom track.
So there's going to be just a silence on the phone for a second. And then Sage is going to say, John, we've always been a team. Sometimes you don't let us help you. It's been really hard for us to support you and have your back when you don't tell us what you're doing or what you need. So the best way for us to help you to survive, which is what we all want, you're going to have to start telling us things and asking for help when you need help. Can you do that?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's what I'm doing now.
Good. Do you want to come stay here?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I'll make up a room for you.
This house is spooky. It's big and empty.
Yeah, and you should be with family tonight.
And as John is saying that and hanging up the phone, we see that his parents' apartment is a place that has like a lot of glass and a lot of reflective surfaces and everything like that. And in every one of them is a shadowy, hazy puck.
Protean City Comics is a production of the Stop, Hack, and Roll podcast network. It is produced and edited by James Malloy. This issue was emceed by Brandon Leon Gambetta, who can be found on Twitter at Dr. Captain Cobalt. Penance is played by me, Elsbeth Dudman, and I can be found on Twitter at The Cat on the Wall. Puck is played by James Malloy, who can be found on Twitter at AndTheMeltdowns. Frequency is played by Rob Harvey, who can be found on Twitter at rharvey1211. The introduction is voiced by Peter DiGilio. All music was composed by Jim Malloy. Masks, A New Generation is a game by Brendan Conway and published by Magpie Games. This podcast is created thanks to the financial support of backers at patreon.com/stophackandroll. Join us on our Discord at discord.stophackandroll.com. Follow us on Twitter at Protean City and on Instagram at Protean City Comics. Subscribe to Protean City Comics on iTunes or anywhere podcasts are found. Join us next Wednesday to find out what thrilling adventures lie ahead.